Greetings. I am Shisada Akona Kamada, and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine. Good evening, everybody. This is Shisada Akona Kamada. You're listening to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. Every time I hear those birds, it makes me smile. You know what? I really love that on the intro. I hope you do too. So I'm joined tonight by Piela Yen and by our core council members, Tim, Linda, and Megan. And we're looking forward to another lovely program with you. So let's go ahead, take a deep breath, call yourselves forward, and we'll clear the space. Mother, Father, God, that I am, through the Great Central Sun Hierarchy, through the Office of the Christ, through the Order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles, not emanating directly, from our I Am Presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, Keeper of the Violet Flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. And now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light to surround each one of us. I ask that they be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. Now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. And Pielian and I place ourselves in service to all of you tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions, and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. Because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Right. Lovely. Come on back. So something popped into my awareness when I went in to do the clearing, and it's telling me to we haven't even done it yet, but I got a very firm directive. The clearing that we do, that protection, is something that was passed to me. And I know I've spoken about it like way back in the programs and actually went through and explained it. But I do have an actual video that is on YouTube of my voice doing that protection. And we need to get that put on our website. And we need to do that really soon. I'm looking at Tim because he's our webmaster extraordinaire. I have a sense that there are people out there who hear that, but they want to be able to access it. So if I'm speaking to you, that's why. For some reason, that kind of came in there. So we will get that done as soon as possible. And what else? So we have had an interesting night here in Charlotte. We hold our physical satsang first. And today was a unique day certainly I did something I've never done before during a satsang program. In my work, I don't generally, I don't refer people to other teachers because it can be very, it can work against someone to like start with one teacher and then move to a different teacher and try to do both simultaneously, because you can run into spots that seem to be conflicting, and then the mind loves to take stuff like that and run with it, and then it creates doubt on one side or on both sides, and it can be very messy. So I really don't do that. For those of you who do follow us on our Facebook page, you'll notice that we do post quotes when they're in support of our work. So you'll see a lot of Byron Katie quotes popping up, and sometimes, I just did a blog post and mentioned Vivekananda in there. And so certainly when there is stuff that comes that is definitely supporting the work that we do, then I am always free to, you know, bring something in. But today it was interesting because I did something completely different for satsang. We actually did a meditation to a cryon channeling, which was really unique. I was aware of cryon because he came in. I think the impetus for him coming in as a channel came at Harmonic Convergence, but it was a couple years until he actually came in through his channel. And so he's been here, you know, doing his work for a very long time, like Rampa and others, and does excellent work. But I had never actually listened to a cryon message. And through an interesting set of circumstances, one came into my awareness today, and I kind of watched as the finger hit the play button, and this thing came up. And I shared that thing with my our board of directors today on email, but along the sidebar on YouTube, you know, there's always other suggested videos, and I saw this one that caught my eye, and it was so powerful when I listened to it. It literally pulled me into meditation. You know, the energy was so strong behind it, and so I decided that we would actually go into meditation with it tonight during the session, and I would love to share it with all of you. I'm thinking I can at least send you over there if you have any interest in listening to it. What did I say it was called? Do you remember?
No.
Does anyone remember? I said what it was. I'm sorry. I can't hear you. Put it. Oh, he's so smart. Put it on the website. Okay. So that's exactly what we'll do. I will mention that. Actually, I'll go ahead and mention it on the Facebook page probably tomorrow. And we can put it on the website. Look under, where do you want it, Tim? Under events? Or where we have the satsang thing? Maybe just a little blurb right there just to direct people. But it was so cool because he's talking about the energy of history. And for those of you who have been part of this work through just even listening to me on a weekly basis, you will know that that's polarized energy. Right? The energy of history. Because in highest truth, there is no time. Time is created by the lower mind. And there is also no such thing as cause and effect, because that's a condition of linear time. So the energy of history is exactly what all of you in doing your work are moving through and dissolving out of. Understand? That's what we as a collective are dissolving. Is the energy of history. Pialyan is giving me this really blank stare right now. Are you deep in thought? Or have I lost you completely?
No, it makes sense, because while we were listening to the meditation, I was able to see that the work that we're doing is a return to love. And I saw that as I do my work, that I could actually see how it was affecting everyone that I am around, mm-hmm. and how they're returning to love, and how it just keeps, you know, going out from each person. And it's just like, it just keeps expanding.
Yes.
And so I can see what you're saying about how we're for changing that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And of course, the challenge in it is that, like he said at a couple of different points, you know, pointing out that someone would say, but that's just the way humans are. That's what men do, right? Is that true? Well, yes and no, right? So on one level, is it true? Yes. Within this polarized paradigm of third dimensional reality, is it true that humankind just seems to make the same mistakes over and over and over again? They never actually learn from their mistakes. Yeah, we could argue for that, couldn't we? Right? How many wars have to be gone through? How many lives have to be lost? And we're still in the middle of it, right? However, outside of that, when functioning from a higher state of awareness, when you're functioning from your heart, is it true? No. Right? So, and it's the challenge of the work is to function from your heart, sending out that non-polarized energy, recognizing that in the world, it's what you're going to get back most of the time, right? Not having an expectation that what you should get back would be non-polarized energy, right? You'd be a fool to expect that, wouldn't you? Here? No matter how much work you've done. If there's any expectation at all, you know you haven't arrived, right? And certainly to have the concept, and a lot of you know, seekers do, the concept that, well, if I do my work the way that they all see it, initially especially, is, so if I do my work, like, all this is going to clear up, right? And you see that's a very selfish motive for your own work even. So everyone comes into it from a very selfish place because we all want to be clear. We all want our lives to be smoother, right? So you tell me I create my reality. So if I clear it all up here, it means out there it's going to be perfect and smooth and, well, no, because we're still walking in a polarized world, right? And I had a conversation with someone that I love very dearly one day, and this was quite some time ago, and she said, I just can't understand it. I said, what? And she said, well, I've been happier, you know, in the last couple of weeks than I've ever been in my life. I have felt clearer than I have ever felt. She is a student, was a student of the work, I believe. And I didn't work with her, but I know her. And she said, you know, I just don't understand why it seems like the world outside me is just crazier than it's ever been. And of course, I'm laughing. I'm just laughing. Because of course, what else would you expect? You know, but she couldn't see it. Because there's an expectation that, oh, I've really been doing my work and I feel so good here. So therefore, it's supposed to be reflected out there. Well, we can come back now to our sense of a false sense of spiritual illumination even, yeah? Because just because we can get ourselves in a good spot here, you know, we can feel our heart and we feel like we're really extending ourselves to others and being very open and honest and it feels really good. It's very tricky because mind can take that and turn it into a way to convince itself that, oh, I've arrived. I must be almost enlightened, right? And so what is the world showing you? Not yet, right? Here's all this crazy stuff that's still coming, right? And within the crazy stuff, what was she showing me? That she still identified with separation. You see? She held herself as separate from it. I'm here and everything else is there. Yeah. And it's still just as polarized. It has a prettier face to it now, though. But it's still just as polarized. Rather than her as a seeker looking and going, wow, I still see so many aspects, yeah, that aren't healed out in the world. I can still see them. Yeah, because they're her, right? They're her, and it's also all of us simultaneously. It's both. It's the collective, and it's the personal projection, because there is no differentiation. And isn't that what we're seeing? So this is what we're seeing. Now, is it true? Humankind, you know, that's what men do. They dominate. Yeah. Why? Well, because they're lost in the illusion of separation. Is it better? And this is a really good question for contemplation. Is it better to be in a spot where we associate ourselves with the light, you know, and can move ourselves into a space of seeming peace, but still witness the outer world as separate? Is that any better than being one of the ones who participates in the chaos?
Are you waiting for an answer?
Yeah, someone could answer. I did pose it as a question. It was kind of rhetorical, but she could answer. Sure.
The pause was a little longer than...
It was a little longer than usual. Do you have an answer? She's not committing.
I'm going to go with, no, it's not any better.
Well, of course it's a little better, right? Because everything happens in degrees. Everything is not black and white. So it'd be easy to say, well, no, it's not any better because it's still separation. It's still being held in place, right? But within the paradigm of polarization, is it not better to function from compassion than to function from hatred? Yeah, of course it is, right? Compassion is the highest human emotion is compassion. Love being outside of a human emotion. So, of course, do you have a question, honey? Come over. Here's Megan, everybody.
Are you saying that even like a self-realized being or someone who's enlightened, that you still go out in the world and, of course, you experience the collective, but you still see yourself?
Yeah. Okay, this is a great question. Do you still see yourself? Well, what self would we be referring to? The lower self. You would still see the lower self to a certain degree, wouldn't you? If there was nothing of the lower self in place at all, you couldn't be here. You would dissolve out of this whole level. You've got to hold a certain energy just to even be here in physicality, right? So, you know, yeah, I mean, don't think that... I'd love to use Jesus as an example for things. It's like you can always go back to Jesus on the cross and use that as an example. And so I will again. And it's not like Jesus is crucified and didn't witness the personal self. Of course. Right? It witnessed physical discomfort, did it not? And what is that? What would that be? That would be the personal self. Yeah. It could witness everything that was going on and know what it was, right? But not attached to it. And that's the difference. There was no attachment to it, no identification with that thing that runs.
It's like, there's a nail there.
Or maybe it was, ow, that hurts. Right? But it doesn't mean that from a core place, he was saying, you're hurting me. See what I mean? Remember what the Buddha said, right? That pain and suffering aren't the same thing. There can be pain, but there doesn't have to be suffering. Right? That makes sense? Does that answer the question? Yeah. So in this world, we are going to witness this. You know, until you're not here anymore, you are going to witness polarization. There's no way around it. Unless you are like Ananda Moyima, right? So she was so in a divine state of bliss all the time that like she was completely oblivious to what was going on here. You know, and her devotees had to follow her around and spoon feed her because she wouldn't eat, she wouldn't do anything, you know. I mean, it was like taking care of an infant. You know, that's where kind of how her husband had to describe it. Because that's the state she lived in. Well, that's lovely and that's, you know, beautiful, but that's not what we're being called to do here, right? We actually did come here to be of service in another way. She was of service the way she needed to be. She needed to show people, especially as a woman, right, that level of enlightened state is possible for a woman. because let's face it, that's has not been historically what we've been shown. It's always been a man's thing, right? Women weren't invited to the show, right? But that's ridiculous, of course. Absolutely ridiculous. So it was important for her to do that. And there are other women out there who have their own, you know, Amma being one. She has her own work, and it's very specific for her because it's serving its purpose. But for many of us females, you know, we're being called to come forward in our level of service in a way where we really are kind of grounded in the world. Yeah. And it's walking that, making that balance and walking that line between, you know, being too much in the world or being not enough in the world. It's really walking both, right? To bring the level of awareness that we come into in this kind of work that we do, and then take that level of awareness and move it in the world. And Megan, you're a good example of that because you're taking your understandings. And can I just, you know, generally speaking, so she teaches college and she's a science teacher. So she has an opportunity to take her understandings and actually apply them in her classes now to get the kids to see that, you know, you can make an impact. Your choices make an impact, right? How we view the world makes an impact. And where are you going to function from? So she's doing what we're doing here. And I keep talking about the importance of where do you make your choices from. So she's doing that right now with her classes. And she's seeing an impact with the kids. You know, they're bringing their level of awareness to her, saying like, wow, like I didn't even realize I was like that. And I'm ashamed of that. You know, she actually has kids who are witnessing that they're ashamed of themselves for how they've been functioning and how they look at the planet and all of that. So what a beautiful thing. And what a huge level of service, right? I mean, don't go out there. I mean, remember, your life is your spiritual path. So whatever that is. So we have a college teacher, right? And it's her life, and she's using it in order to move the work forward, right? And we have other people. We have someone who's a nanny, and she's going to move her work forward with the children that she deals with because they're going to get teachings through watching her more than anything, more than her actually teaching them. They're going to watch her. Where does she function from, right? And they'll model themselves after her because she's a primary caregiver. And she will be a huge role model for them, right? As far as their future patterning imprinting goes. Or lack of imprinting. See, that's the power there, right? It was like when I first started doing my work, I remember very, very well, my youngest at that time was, okay, so this was 80, or excuse me, what year was it? Well, I don't even know where we are anymore, 14? So it was like 2008, and so my youngest was not quite four. And my guide was staying with me. And we were sitting in the living room one day. And my youngest came in and something had happened. And I had to correct her, right? In a very gentle way. But as most children who have not been imprinted yet, they're very, very sensitive, right? So just me just saying to her, you know, however I said, no, you know, you need to do it this way or whatever it was. I mean, she just like melted down, right? And in that moment, my guide had the opportunity to show me she's mind is trying to pattern in shame right there. And you could watch it. And I was like, oh my gosh. So in the moment, I had an opportunity to come in right in the middle of all of that and stop it with her, right? To keep it from locking in, because that's what was trying to happen. And that's what happens. It takes a while for it to lock in, the imprinting. It's not usually just the one instance and then it's done. It's because it happens over and over and it gets locked in more and more and more, right? So because she was so young, we were given an opportunity to witness it and then come in from a different place so that you moved her out of it very quickly. You know, no, baby, there's nothing to cry over. You know, you don't need to feel bad at all. It's fine. We just need to blah, blah, you know. And it's like, oh, right. Now that doesn't mean she's not imprinted now, because of course she is. Right. But I watched her. She's my youngest. And I watched how long it took for that to really get planted in her. Because once they go to school, I mean, you know, you can't stop all that. Right. But when she was home and she was just home, it just didn't exist for her. You know, the whole thing about feeling shameful about her actions. Yeah. So that's just another example of how you, in your life, you know, you take your understandings and now you live them and look at the impact that it makes, right? So we have other people in the banking community that are doing this work, and they have an opportunity to take their understandings and apply them in like management positions in the financial industry. Well, that's a pretty big deal. Financial industry is a mess, right? And some kind of new level of consciousness has to come into it, and with enough impetus behind it to make an impact so that it can shift out of the mentality, the history energy, right? To shift out of that and to function from a new paradigm. How's that going to happen if there aren't people who are students of the work in those jobs, right? How's it going to happen? It's not going to come from the outside. It's going to come from the inside. So I think that's something that a lot of seekers get really hung up on. It's like, you know, they're all like, oh, I really, well, I'll use you, PLN, as my perfect example. Oh, I really want to be able to spend all my time doing my, being of service to the spiritual work and for the Shambhala Center. Well, that's beautiful. And of course, wouldn't that be great, right? If we actually had enough money coming in through donations that we could afford to pay someone a salary, you know, that would be beautiful. But right now, it's not reality, is it? So until that time, what do? Well, you go out in the world the way you have to be in the world, and you just take it with you, right? And there's no difference. It's just your preference. That's the only difference, right? And where does the preference come from anyway? I am actually asking you that question because I am talking about you.
Where does the preference come from?
Yeah.
Desires, beliefs.
What'd you say?
What'd he say? Call my lifeline. I'm going to say, you know, just desires, beliefs.
Which is what? Where does that come from? Your desires and beliefs?
From mind.
That's right. So even that is a polarized presentation of the lower mind. Even that, even the one who says, I'm a seeker, I love my guru, I want to serve all the time, I want to be of service to our organization and move it into the world. But even that, when seen the way you were seeing it, isn't even coming from your heart. See that? See how subtle it is? And how do we know that? Because she would rather do that than go out and get a job in, the, say, the banking industry. Right? She sees them as separate, doesn't she? What? You saw that? Yeah, yeah. You see it as separate. It's not separate. It's not separate. It's all the same. You know, your life is your spiritual path. I don't care what you're doing. You don't ever have to listen to anybody like me, ever. You know? And you can wake up. You can live a Christed life without ever, ever hearing about the Christ. Right? If you really think of it that way. You could be born and live a Christed life your whole lifetime and never have a clue about religion or spirituality or any of it. Or, you know, you end up being a seeker running after enlightenment for a lifetime, and at the end of it finding that you got to be recycled again because you still held it as separate. Right? Now, that's not to say that you wouldn't have made strides in your evolution from being a hardcore seeker, because of course you would. Remember, it's not black and white. It's always degrees of the same. That's why I love Vivekananda, because that's like his, one of his biggest messages was always, you know, that it's not good and bad. It's always degrees of the same thing. You know, when you push it too far to one side, it looks bad. You push it too far to the other, it looks good. And then there's everything in between. But it's never one or the other, ever. Right? And that, and just within that concept right there, if you can really lock onto just that, you'll really see it. That there is no separation. There can't be. If it's all on a sliding scale, of, say, 0 to 100, is 0 separate from 100? Right? It can't be. It doesn't stand to reason, right? Vivekananda is a very rational sage. Love his work, especially for people who are very intellectual, because they get it. They take those statements and they reason through them. They're like, oh, that's right. It doesn't make sense. And yet we do that, don't we? You know, so we'll take a guy who, you know, you have some, we've got oming going on next door. You take someone who, you know, someone in your family, and they're complaining about so-and-so did this, and, you know, they have it in their head that we'll use a celebrity or use the president. Everybody hates the president. So we'll use the president, you know, oh, the president did this and that, blah, blah, and he's a no good, blah, blah. Right. And within that, there's nothing there in that person who can recognize anything of value, anything that's common between the two of you. You're both men. It could just be that, right? But we have to hold the person completely separate. We can't see that it's not just that simple, right? And yet, in truth, it's actually incredibly simple once you see it, that there is no separation. There just can't be. Right? How is God presenting itself in this form? Right? Okay, so in this form, God's presenting itself as a Democrat or a far right wing Republican, right? But it's still God. And I was saying earlier to the group tonight, you know, going back to the Buddha. So in the teachings of Buddhism, they teach you that, you know, this world is illusion. Is it true? Absolutely, right? But there's polarization that gets built into that belief. If it's illusion and it's not real, what kind of value do we place on it? Think about that. Think about seekers out there and what they do with that. Oh, it doesn't really matter what I do. All of this is just illusion anyway, right? What kind of value do we place on this illusory reality? Not much. Because everything's about getting out of it, right? You're still holding it polarized, aren't you? You see? You're still holding it separate. You're saying, I'm here now, but I want to be there then. And in order to be there, I can't be here, right? If I was there, I wouldn't have to be here. And you lose the whole point of the thing. It's, you know, I don't think the Buddha would be too happy that people take it that way. Because the reality is that the real, capital R, the divine, is found in the illusion itself. Is it true that this world is illusion? Absolutely. However, the caveat is that the real is found in it. And that's what every awakened soul on the planet will tell you. That's what they woke up to realize. It was there the whole time. The moment when you see it, oh my God, heaven is right here. And it's been here the whole time. And I just couldn't see it, right? It didn't go anywhere. It was just the way that I viewed it. And I viewed it as what? Separate. And I viewed all this stuff as bad, right? And then in a moment of realization, that all falls away. And you see that God is right here, right now, and always has been. Now, certainly that's a level of consciousness that you move into, and so for me to speak it to you isn't going to have the same impact as you actually experiencing it for yourself, but it does reach your consciousness just in me speaking it to you. It does reach a portion of consciousness that has been out of touch with that, right? Because remember, right now, consciousness is enslaved. It's enslaved in the cycle here, in the program. And it can't see its way out, right? So that's why there are those of us who came to be of service at the level that I function from. So we function as guides to give you the understandings and then to guide you to actually witness those understandings and have an experiential understanding of them through your own life, right? And then at that point, turn you loose so that you can live your lives from a very different place. And now you're impacting the world, right? how many people can I impact? Well, I don't know. But let's say I impacted 100 people, but every one of those 100 people went out into the world and impacted their 100 people. And it kept going and going and going, right? So the people that I can reach will have a far greater impact than I ever will. But if there aren't people like me who will come to do this level of service, then those 100 people never get reached, right? And it kind of stops there. So there need to be some of us out there who are willing to take the heat, take people's criticisms, you know, the people who say, I think what you're doing is garbage and doesn't make any sense and you're crazy, right? That's all right. They called Jesus crazy too, right? So in line with that, I guess it was something that I actually meant to say at the beginning of the program, and I forgot because I got the thing about the website. When I finish our physical satsang here in Charlotte, we go into a short meditation between Pielian and I. And tonight when we did, the energy of it actually brought me to tears, because I was in such a space of incredible gratitude for being allowed to do the work that I do. And it's very funny, you know, people who do the kind of work that I do, it kind of can be a love-hate thing, because you don't get time away. It's constantly on, you know, it's like the job that never, ever quits. And, you know, it's voluntary. There's no money. There's sometimes you wonder, why on earth am I doing this? Like, I could have this beautiful life if I just had a basic life like everybody else, you know, and I'd be so peaceful and happy and it would be exquisite. But yet I keep coming back for more, you know, torture from my students. But at the end of the day, I'm so grateful that I have the opportunity to do it. And I have Linda, who she's a darling, because every year on September 11th, she has to, oh, I'm sorry, the 10th, she has to text me and thank me, you know, for being her guide for another year. You know, it's been 4 years now. And it's so beautiful, because just that little reminder, I just look at it and I'm like, you know, she is so grateful. And heaven knows I know that feeling, because that's exactly how I feel about my guide, you know, just a huge amount of gratitude. But what I said to her when I got her text this year, I told her that the gratitude was, what did I say? It's reciprocal. And because it's just as important for me that my students understand that I'm grateful for the opportunity to guide them. And that's not false humility. I really mean it. And that brings me to tears, because when I see, you know, the impact that the work has, first off, I know from my own experience the impact the work has and the gratitude I have for being able to have the opportunity to do that. And then when I get an opportunity to be with anybody and guide them, and I watch them move through the veils and come out lighter and brighter every time. And when I watch them, you know, persevere, and there's sometimes that it's so hard. And right now, most of my students are dealing with things that are so entrenched and just so heavy and difficult to move through. And I'm watching them, you know, just kind of pull themselves up over and over again and say, I'm going back in, you know, I don't want to do it, but I'm going back in and we're going to get through this thing. It's like, I'm so proud of all of them. And it's just like the greatest privilege to watch that, to watch the human spirit, you know, just saying, I can do this thing, you know, even though I want to quit over and over and over again, I'll still do this thing. And, you know, I am so grateful that, you know, that the masters have allowed me to take this role, because that's really what has happened. And so I want to put that out to all of you too, because on some level you are in my awareness, and it means something to me. And I don't want you to think anything other than that. I'm not doing this radio program for nothing. I am not. There's a very specific reason I do it. And I am very grateful for anyone who listens in. And I thank all of you for doing so each week. So where are we at time-wise? Pielian.
It is 9:41. We still have a good amount of time.
Okay, so like our music tonight is 5 minutes and change. So we have like 10 minutes?
Yeah, let's say we have to begin the song at 9:52. 11 minutes.
The countdown begins. Okay, so for the next 11 minutes, do either of the three of you have any questions right now? Anything coming up? Did I really kind of get to what I meant to say about the energy of history? Did I finish that? I don't know. Let me see.
Well, I was going to say you did it in your roundabout way.
The way that I always function. Did we get there? I think so. You can't track it linearly, but somehow it always comes around on itself. Okay, so just to recap that piece, that is, you know, definitely why we're doing the work. It does dissolve that out. When you really do see in your life that there is no cause and effect, that's a huge one. When you recognize how the mind creates it and is so quick to jump to it, right? Here's this, and then we automatically, the mind jumps into its database and goes, oh, I remember when that happened before, and so this is what's coming next. And you literally can experience that. I think I've said this on the air, I'm not sure. When I had the actual experience of that, I was sitting out on my deck, and it was a beautiful, like, early summer day, and my kids, this was years ago, my kids were swinging on the swing set. Two of them, the girls were. And I remember I had just, typical for me, I had just received that teaching from my guide that the mind creates time. And in a moment, I was laying there in the sun because it was gorgeous out, and I heard, you know, the sound that the wind makes in the trees and the leaves rustling. I heard it. And I witnessed in the moment how mind automatically just went and projected out the wind's coming, right? And now it's looking for the feeling on the skin. And then I felt it. And it was like, oh! And it was like one of those, I mean, you could have knocked me over kind of moments, right? Because I saw it so clearly. It was like right there. And I stood up. And I'm in this completely different space now. It was like literally like I jumped out of third dimensional reality altogether. And I'm in this completely different space. And I'm standing on my deck, and I look over at my daughters, and they're swinging. And so I go to walk down the deck stairs, and that was when I experienced what time actually is. I actually experienced the pulsation of consciousness. And for about the next maybe minute, that was literally how I was living. I walked down the stairs, and I said something to the girls, and I was listening to them laughing as they were swinging. And it was like freeze frames of a movie. And I was just like, in absolute wonderment standing in this space. It felt like I was standing outside of it, but I was in it at the same time, you know. But I saw it so clearly that that's exactly what the mind does, right? And then later came the real lesson about cause and effect. And that was someone knocked a lamp over in my family room, and I was sitting in my living room, and I could tell by the sound I had a pretty good idea of what just happened. And I witnessed mind projecting out before I got in the room what happened. So I had already convinced myself that the lamp had been knocked over. And I came, just as I came into the room, I saw the backside of my son turning the corner to go up the stairs. And the immediate projection was my son knocked my lamp over. Now, is it true? Did I have any evidence in that moment that that was what happened? No, of course not. Right? Of course not. But that's what happened in my mental state. Right? So you automatically then are functioning out of a space where your projection is this, and of course the story will run, and now mom, who has convinced herself already that the child has done something horrendous, like broken her stained glass lamp, right, functions from a very different spot than her heart, doesn't she? What did you do? Right? Yeah. And it was so powerful for me because literally I walked in the door and I saw him go, and I saw it. It was like right there. The observer saw it all. And in that moment, there was no blame placed on anything because all I could see was what was. Lamp on floor, child running upstairs. Right? That was reality. There was no story other than that. That was reality, right? No superimposition of, you know, precious, super expensive stained glass lamp on floor that I can't replace, and guilty, nasty little child running up the stairs, right? Which would have been mom's angry, victimized mom's story. And that just didn't exist. And so in the moment when I was able to see it, then I called him down and we talked about what happened, but I was in my heart and I was able to talk to him from a very different place. You know, it just was kind of like, you know, do you know what just happened? Right. From not a place where I'm grilling him, and he's just a little kid. So he's honest. And he told me what happened. I was like, okay. And then the only point that I needed to make with him was, well, you can see that these things can fall over and they're made of glass and you just need to be more careful around them. End of story, right? Because the bottom line is the kid's going to feel bad enough on his own. Do you really need to cram it down his throat that he's done something horrendous, right? I mean, what do we think we're really accomplishing by that? Driving home a point. Thanks, you know, stick the knife in a little deeper and twist it a couple times, right? But when you think about that with just even the adults in your life, how many people, like, that's what you do? Like, you feel like someone did something and it was something they shouldn't have done, and we have to, like, remind them of how horrendous it was? Or, you know, what were you thinking? I love that people use that all the time. Well, what the hell were you thinking? I'm like, really? Where's the compassion in that? That person already feels like crap. Do you really need to make them feel worse? You know? And what's that do for you? So you could feel a little better about yourself by making the other person feel worse? Is that what we're here to do? You know? Or are we here to love someone unconditionally and recognize that, yeah, you may have messed up, but I still love you. I'm not going to withhold my love from you just because you messed up. Now, depending on what the issue was, depending on what you did and the direct impact it may have had on me, you know, I have to function from the spot where, you know, maybe I won't allow myself in that space again with you, right? If you have betrayed a trust that we have, I have to be wise to that, right? So you have to walk both worlds simultaneously, remember? And I say to everybody, you know, being a spiritual student does not mean you become a doormat at all. So you have to learn to have boundaries. Boundaries are a good thing. There's nothing wrong with that. Okay, just because we love everybody doesn't mean that we let anybody do what they want to us and take advantage of us and all of that. That's not loving yourself. That's not respecting yourself or honoring yourself. And above anything else, you have to do that, right? As the old saying goes, you know, you came into this world alone and you're going to go out alone. Is it true? Yeah. Yes and no. You got to take all of it with you. But if you don't love, honor, and respect yourself, how can you love, honor, and respect anybody else? Really? You may think you are, but that's a very warped sense of what love, honor, and respect are. Now, it doesn't mean that you respect yourself to the point where you're going to bash somebody else when they're acting disrespectful, right? There's a way to get a message across without being demeaning to someone or driving home the point, as Megan says, right? You see, so it's this line that we walk. You have to walk the line of the Christ, right? But ultimately, the point of the work is to bring more joy into your life and more peace and more love. That's the point. Unfortunately, to get there, you got to go through the harder emotional stuff because it all is just energy that got trapped, mostly when you were younger, you know, from a very innocent place too. You know, it was trapped because it served a purpose. It was a level of pain that was really horrendous. And so mind trying to protect itself just kind of shut that stuff down. But as an adult, you know, I've been working with students recently and bringing this up, that as an adult, that same level of protection does not serve you. And it does the exact opposite. that level that functioned in a necessary way when you were small now is keeping you from actually being what you can be and living your spirituality in the world, right? Being divine here. It's keeping you trapped in the space of separation. So you have to be willing to go in and walk through all of that old stuff that got shoved way back in the recesses of your consciousness because you didn't ever want to see it again. And at some point you start to recognize that even though you shoved it there, you're still seeing it. You're still going to see it. You're seeing it in the outside world all the time until you decide that, okay, enough is enough. And we're going to go in and I'm going to do the work within now so that when it comes up outside in the outer world, which it will, right? Because it's polarized, it won't affect you anymore. That's the point, right? You will not be affected by it. All right. Enough for our discourse tonight and into meditation. We have a really lovely song, a Ganesh invocation tonight. Beautiful stuff. Enjoy the meditation, and we will see you next week. Our deepest love to you. Thank you. Good night.
You are divine.